This is Cage Fire Radio.
Cage Fire Radio, an MMA Madhouse production brought to you by BrawlBase.com.
I'm doing great. I'm ready for a good show tonight. We've got a pretty stacked show tonight, so I'm pretty excited. We've got two guests, starting off with Jesse Rojo and then Kevin Bain. And then after that, we should have an update on Sam the Sea Monster Sealander and how he's doing on the road to recovery. And then to end the show, we should have Lopaki and Leonard from last week's discussion.
Yes, I locked up Skippy tonight, so let's bring in your guest co-host.
Well, I'm a poor man, I feel no pain. I struggled half of my life by going against the grain, but I think I can only get one chance at this. I'm going to...
Caitlin, Carl, how's everybody doing?
Hi.
Great. I got some
doing good. Sounds like we're going to have an exciting night. You've got some good guests lined up from what I've been able to discover about them. I read this I read this article about one of them by somebody I know. Do you know who wrote that, Caitlin?
No.
You don't know who wrote that? Let me read.
Of course I do. It was yours truly.
Oh,
Those are the best articles put on MMA Madhouse.
That's probably true.
Most likely. So did you cover any events this weekend, or do you have any coming up that you're going to?
I'm trying to make it to FCFF, unless you can make it.
I wasn't planning on it. I'm kind of still up in the air about that.
I might see if Devin can go.
Yeah. Yep, that looks like I haven't looked at the card yet, but I've heard that it looks pretty good, so.
Well, I wouldn't mind seeing Alex and Adam King's rematch on that card from when, you know, the last time they fought, Adam won by a first-round knockout. Then they were going to rematch at Budo 8, and unfortunately Adam got in a car wreck on his way to Bend and was unable to compete that night.
I would assume not.
Yeah, situation.
Wow. That is definitely a bummer. I would hate to have to call and tell him I can't fight tonight because I got in a wreck on the way there. That's a bummer. But,
At least they got to make the call, you know?
Definitely. At least they got to make the call. Well, that's good. How was your weekend?
Did you cover anything? My weekend?
I was planning on covering FAMA last weekend, but it was on my 18th birthday, and I was in limbo because I was like, well, if the Ducks are blowing out USC in the first half, well, then I'll probably go, but it didn't end up that way. So I didn't end up going and covering it.
The who? The who?
The better than you know.
What did you call them? The sucks? Yeah. They struggled this week.
Wow. That's some tough luck out there.
You know, I mean, I'm an Oregon State alumni, so I'm not going to sit here and talk nice.
I knew there was something bad about you.
You heard something bad about me?
I said I knew there was something bad about you.
Oh, my goodness. Too bad that you love me anyway.
Oh, I know. We've got so much. We have so much love on Madhouse, don't we?
Yes, we do.
No, it's a bummer I couldn't come down to Budo 9 and see all you guys, but hopefully I can come down in the spring for Budo, though.
January, maybe February, I think Paul and Derek are talking about doing the next Budo event, maybe as early as February, as early as January and as late as February.
Do you know why they wait so long in between their events?
Well, because one of the things, you don't want to oversaturate the market and with fight cards. And plus, like, if you're putting on a fight card a whole lot, then you're not allowing fighters to get out and travel sometimes and experience other promotions. And it kind of takes the novelty away from your promotion. So, while they're the only promotion in Central Oregon, they don't want to step on the toes of other promotions, and that way, the MMA community kind of works together in that manner.
Okay, well, I guess that's smart then. I believe we have our first guest ready to go, Jesse Rojo from Octagon MMA. Jesse, are you there?
Yeah, what's up?
Hi, Jesse. Do you want to give a quick bio about yourself, where you're from, maybe your record, and how you got into fighting?
Yeah, sure. So, as you said, I train out of the Octagon MMA. I made my MMA debut when I just about turned 15, and I currently have a record of 4-1. And I got into MMA because, frankly, I first got into karate because I wanted to be a Power Ranger. I was like 6 years old.
Didn't you mean the Green Ranger?
I guess not. No. Yeah. Not in my cards anymore, I guess. But yeah, after karate, I got into Muay Thai and then MMA. And since I'm already not that good looking, MMA just seemed like a destiny, since getting punched in the face didn't seem so bad.
Well, I guess those are all good reasons to join in, huh?
Yeah.
So, do you want to talk about your most recent event last weekend?
I fought a kid named Charlie Davis, who fortunately stepped in on last second since my original opponent backed out due to injury. And he trains Team Chaos, which I guess is a bit of a step up in an opponent for me, since he's actually trained compared to a few of my last opponents. But the biggest thing was that I learned the day of the fight that he was 6'3", so it was really awkward fighting a man that was almost a foot taller than me. So I actually had to reach pretty high up when I tried to punch him in the face. And when I actually tried to take him down once in the first round, he almost caught me at the triangle. Fortunately, I got out, though, and then ended up submitting him with a armbar in the second round.
Wow, that's awesome.
Jesse, can I ask how old your opponent was?
He was 23 years old.
And where did that fight go down at?
Say again?
Where did that fight go down at?
At the Fisticuffs Gym in Vancouver, Washington.
Awesome. Under Leonard?
Yes.
Yeah, Leonard's a great dude, man.
Yeah, they have some great stuff. They're family friendly.
How does your mom feel about you being in MMA, buddy?
Yeah, say that again. Caitlin kind of got in the way there.
How does your mom feel about you being in MMA?
She, I guess, to say it lightly, is kind of nervous when I fight. I mean, fortunately, she's not against me fighting. She knows that I'm pretty good. But she definitely gets scared when I'm fighting, and she's the one who's taking the video, so every time I watch the video after I fight, you can hear screaming and stuff like that. There was one time I think it was like my third fight or something, she's taking video and I get punched in the face and she just yells out, "Oh crap." So yeah, I guess she's pretty scared on fighting.
Do you have a hard time when you're watching the tape not laughing when you're hearing your mom's commentary as the fight's going down?
Very difficult, yeah. I mean, she's saying all this in Spanish, which just makes it sound that much funnier. So, I mean, I'm trying not to laugh, especially since she's usually right next to me, and every time I laugh, she smacks me in the head. So, yeah.
Sounds like you got a good mom, man. Sounds like you got a good mom.
Yeah, she's pretty great.
Was it hard for you to convince her to let you take a fight? Like, it, I mean, at 15, you know, a lot of people think that that might be a little bit young to be stepping in the octagon. It sounds like you handle yourself very well inside the cage. Did you have a hard time convincing your mom to let you fight before turning 18, or and was that something that you had your coaches talk to her about too?
Surprisingly, it wasn't that hard. I mean, I'm pretty sure the only reason she let me fight MMA was actually because both her and my dad didn't really know what MMA was. So, I mean, they probably thought that it'd be like a boxing match with headgear and all that. So I think that was the main reason behind the convincing process, the fact that they didn't know exactly what it was. And so the day when I made that debut and they found out exactly what it was, I mean, they were a bit off-put by it, but luckily I have great parents who completely support me, and they were on my side the entire time, thankfully.
And you said that you originally got into karate, and then you transitioned into Muay Thai before entering into MMA. Have you incorporated any wrestling or Brazilian jiu-jitsu or judo into your training as well?
I train twice a week in wrestling with a former state champion, or actually a couple former state champions, and unfortunately I haven't gone into judo yet. I did do it for a little while, but I haven't dived right into it. Jiu-jitsu, though, is a sort of a passion of mine. I train once a week at Impact Jiu-Jitsu with great coaches over there, and I actually, every time I fight, Trent introduces me with my style being YouTube Jiu-Jitsu, because when I was about 10 years old, I YouTubed a bunch of Jiu-Jitsu moves and tried them out on my brother, who was a really big guy, so every time I tried it, I had to get pretty good technique, and I guess that's the origin of me loving Jiu-Jitsu.
No, that's there's nothing wrong with learning jiu-jitsu through YouTube. I mean, that's some of the ways where you can train with some really top-level guys no matter where you're living at. They might not be able to, like, give you that hands-on training that, that you would get in the gym with them, but being able to watch them practice the techniques, and you can sit there and rewind it and watch it and rewind it and watch it, that's extremely beneficial. I think that's a great tool to keep in your arsenal, and I would recommend doing that no matter where you're training.
Yeah, I agree with you, especially since you get to get a lot of unique perspectives. I mean, since it's not just one coach, it's a variety of them, you get to see the different ways people do an armbar, for example, and stuff like that. It very helps you with your variety of submissions.
No, I definitely agree.
So, from times that we've talked, you've said a lot about how, well, now you've said that you learn a lot of your moves off of YouTube. And so the few times that we've talked, you said that you can beat any opponent if you get their video footage. Do you want to talk about why you can do that?
It's not that I can beat any opponent. I mean, I'm still not that talented. But what I mean behind that is the fact that I'm a very analytical person when I fight. I don't fight with luck in my hands. I mean, I have a good chin, but I don't like getting punched in the face. And so when I fight, I make a very, very detailed game plan with a whole lot of backup options so that in case something happens, I know what I'm going to do. And it especially helps when I have video of my opponent so I can make it specific to him. But my last three fights, I've had very little video, and fortunately I've won all three of them and actually followed my game plan in each one of them.
Awesome. So do you think ultimately that it's beneficial for you to have video, or have you ever had a fight where you haven't had any video?
Not yet, no. But I do think it'd be very beneficial, I recommend it to look at the video. A lot of people, they don't, and I mean, they have the video and they just don't really analyze it. I recommend it just because, all that extra stuff, even if you're not a huge strategist like I like to be, it still helps. I mean, everything you can do to win a fight, you should do.
So what are all the steps that you take to strategize what you're going to do, and what are all the ways that you do study your opponent?
It's mainly through observations, figuring out what the strengths and weaknesses are, and then basing the game plan off of what my strengths are. And fortunately, I have a style that I'm able to adapt very easily, so I adapt to my opponent, and I don't attack necessarily his weaknesses because a lot of people expect that, but I attack his strengths and what he has weak in his strengths. For example, if I were to fight a boxer, I'd do something that would involve making him kick me, since I'd be more of his weakness than saying him punching me in the head.
Yeah. So also in a lot of your fights, you you jump up and down weight, correct? Jesse?
Yeah, sorry, broke up a little bit there. Can you repeat the question?
In a lot of your fights, you jump up and down in your weight. Is that correct?
Yeah, actually, I weigh about 128 walking around, so I should be fighting 125. I debuted at 135, fought again 135 again, and those two fights were because they were with people my age, so I thought, what the heck? Then, on my most, like, recent fights, I was, I fought 145 once just because it was a last-second switch of opponents, so I said, screw it, just go for it. And then
wait,
I fought 135.
Wait, did you just say you fought a 145?
Yeah, I fought Levi Holland and a 145 bout. I weighed about 128. Yeah.
Not and you came out with a win on that?
Yeah, I ended up winning by third round armbar. I actually did very well in that fight and find it to be my best performance yet.
Wow.
Yeah. And then this last fight, I finally moved to 125. And I'm hoping to stay there and get some quality opponents and hopefully just improve upon my record and see where it goes from there.
Jesse,
so
have you ever considered wrestling at your high school or anything like that? To help with your grappling and the grappling aspect of MMA to kind of maybe more round yourself out. I mean, I understand that you've won a few of your fights through submission, but it sounds like a lot of your background comes via striking and that maybe your opponents end up figuring out that they don't want to stand with you, so they try to take you to the ground where you're able to still continue to win.
I definitely see that being my opponent's view in, especially since now I'm focusing on getting my striking a lot better since even though I started with that striking background, my ground game became my strength. But in terms of wrestling, I actually did in middle school join the wrestling team, and I enjoyed it somewhat. Unfortunately, though, nowadays I take about 4 AP classes as well as go to PCC part-time. So my time isn't exactly – I don't have a lot of time to go to the gym. I go about 4 hours a day, and I rather – go 4 hours a day to my MMA gym where I can get personal training with my wrestling coach rather than actually join the wrestling team where it would affect my MMA schedule.
No, that definitely makes sense. Let's actually talk about that because one of the things when I was getting to talk to Caitlin about you, she mentioned that you are in the running to be the valedictorian at your high school. Is that something that you find that your mixed martial arts training helps you to focus when you're in the classroom and doing your homework?
I actually find it being the other way around. I have a very drive when it comes to school. I love being number one in my class and find all this very enjoying for me in terms of schoolwork. And the schoolwork actually helps me focus in MMA because, I mean, in MMA I actually focus a lot less and find myself slacking off at times. So that schoolwork and that drive that came with has definitely been helping me in terms of MMA and helping me focus in the gym since I do slack off sometimes, admittedly.
What are your long-term education goals, Jesse?
After I graduate high school, I'm going to University of Portland where I will be getting a double major in political science as well as economics and possibly a minor in business as well, since I'll be going to college for about 2 or 3 years, thankfully, since I've accumulated a lot of college credits already.
And are you able to rack up the college credits through PCC while you're also attending high school then?
Yeah, the PCC classes as well as the AP classes.
That's excellent, man. I wish that I hope that there's a lot of young men out there listening, whether they're in MMA or not, and taking your lead on this, because you know a lot of people tend to put their eggs in like that sports basket, and they fail to understand that you know your body will only last so long, but your mind will last forever.
I see that especially. I mean, a lot of these kids, they say they want to be in the UFC and that's their ultimate goal, but that in itself, putting all your efforts into just fighting, makes it so that you need fighting to just make a living. Well, in my case, fighting is something that I need because I love it so much, but I don't need it in terms of there's no other options for me outside of fighting. If I didn't want to be a fighter, I could easily be a lawyer, a politician, or a businessman. I mean, I have these options, and it's very freeing and helps me enjoy MMA.
That's excellent. Do you spread that leadership throughout, like, your gym, even as probably one of the youngest people at your gym or around a younger age? Do you spread that kind of leadership to other people at your gym?
I try to, but every time I end up talking about my grades, Mindy, my manager over there, calls me a nerd. So I end up getting kind of cock blocked when it comes to trying to talk about my grades and stuff like that.
Do you think that's more of a negative effect on what you're there to do? And, like, do you think maybe she's saying that because she wants fighting to be your number one goal?
Oh, no, not in any way. She actually supports me a lot, and she's super nice with the way she makes fun of me, I guess, if that's possible. She just really does make fun of me, I guess. I don't know. I guess I am sort of a nerd, though. I do read comic books. For example, during my fight week this time, they wouldn't allow me to actually do any major training so I could rest up, but I didn't really want to be home since I was very anxious, so I just went to the gym and read comic books. I think that probably led to a notion of me being a nerd.
I got one question for him. What's the best comic book in your collection, bro?
I have to go with my current Justice League collection, in which it's Pain of the Gods, because it's actually a really deep one where they actually go into a lot of Superman and Batman characters and how they're not perfect. And it's very relatable because I strive for perfection every day, whether it's in my education or my MMA career, but it's devastating when I don't get it. For example, after I lost my first fight, I cried a lot because I expected myself to win just so easy.
So really quick before we let you go, do you want to talk about any future promotions that you're fighting at or any events you have coming up?
I don't have a current event coming up, but it's going to be the next FAMA event, the fisticuffs one, because unfortunately due to the new Washington's law, since I'm under 18, I won't be allowed to fight in public organizations, just gym ones. So I'll probably be sticking with fisticuffs for a good while now.
Okay, and then do you want to give some shout-outs, sponsors? And then I know you don't have social networking, so maybe how to contact you?
Well, I want to thank my coaches, Jana Sims, my promoter, Mindy, and all the people at the Octagon, as well as my family, my mom, my dad, and my brother. And if you want to contact me, I recommend it either through going to the Octagon itself, since I'm there mostly all the time, or contacting them through Facebook.
All right, well, awesome. Thanks for coming on the show, and we look forward to seeing your next event and seeing you hopefully come out with that win. So, again, thank you for coming on to Cage Fire Radio, and good luck with your future.
All right, thank you very much.
Hey, Jesse, man, I appreciate it, man. And keep your nose in the books, man, and keep breaking some arms, bro.
Yeah, no problem, bro.
All right. What an awesome guest.
That was a great guest you lined up right there.
Thank you. You know, I'm really intrigued with him.
I bet your mom wishes you were intrigued with him.
What?
I bet your mom wishes you were intrigued with him. Is he going to be your prom date?
Oh, God. Are you kidding me? I don't go for younger.
You say that now. You say that now.
No, I say that forever. This is a public announcement that I don't go for younger guys. Okay, anyways. Moving on to our next guest, who is actually, he's older, I believe. Kevin Bame, he had a fight this weekend, and I believe he is 1-2 now. Kevin, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Awesome. Okay, do you want to give a bio about yourself, where you're from, your record, and maybe how you got into fighting?
Sure. I'm currently 1-2, unfortunately. I started out at Midtown MMA under Corey White, and moved up here to Beaverton to start training at Team Quest and kind of take my MMA to another level. What really got me into fighting was I kind of had a little bit of a bad past, getting into a little bit of trouble, and kind of looked at it as MMA kind of saved me from what I was doing. So, you know, I just want to give everything
awesome.
To it. Yeah.
So you moved from Midtown to Team Quest. Have you started training at Team Quest yet?
I've actually only got in like a day in there right now because I got so excited, came up here and expected to jump straight on it. And then they're like, and here's the bill. And so kind of slowed me down on my process a little bit, but get my first paycheck tomorrow. And so if I don't start training this paycheck, I'll start within 2 weeks from Wednesday, and I'll be able to put in almost every day to it. My work's about a mile and a half from it. So get a walk from a mile and a half to the gym, and then about another few miles to the train. Yeah, it'll be my daily routine.
Well, that's awesome. Have you noticed any immediate differences between Midtown and Team Quest for that one day that you were there?
Yeah, actually, it was like, I mean, it was a whole different environment. It was really organized. I mean, it was a different thing, you know. Team Quest is a big name, and so it was kind of everything I was expecting. I mean, at Midtown, we had it all, and it was more one-on-one training, though. But at Team Quest, we just jumped in and did different drills. It was everything different from, like, the strike count, the 1-2-3, the 1-2-3-4, and stuff like that was different. But then, like, the sparring was different, too. I went in afterwards, and I'd messed up my one good ankle because I had torn ligaments in my right ankle. And I broke the capillary, but I kept training through it. And I actually did a kickboxing match on a fractured ankle and made it worse. And then I went up there on my bad ankle and I started doing some kicks and messed up my good one. But went up there at the end of the night and talked to a guy named Scott, asked him what I had to do to get on the team. And he told me, he asked if I could spar, which didn't really seem like much of a question, just kind of get in there, you're not on type thing. And so went out there and sparred with them, and I found out they spar really hard. It was something I wasn't quite used to because at Midtown we do like fairly light sparring and occasional hard, but no, they go hard. I kind of liked it. It was a fun environment. And, I hope I'm making that. But that was just one of the biggest differences for me was the heavy sparring and kind of seeing the fight team separate from the rest of the classes, because it kind of seemed like there was only a few, like one or two guys that did all the classes and then went to the fight team. And then the rest of the fight team just came in. So that's one thing I wasn't used to.
Kevin, you talked about how MMA kind of maybe saved you from going down the wrong direction. And you trained with a guy that I have a lot of respect for in Corey Agner Wyatt. Not only do I think he's probably arguably one of the top 185ers in the Pacific Northwest, and when I say Pacific Northwest, I'm going to include British Columbia, Alaska, Idaho, Washington, and Northern California. But I also know that Corey's really turned his life around significantly. Was that one of the things, like, your ability to relate to Corey and see how he turned his life around, was that one of the things that made it easier for you to maybe make that transition as well?
That was the biggest thing, honestly, because I kind of felt like if I said anything about my past, I was going to be judged and kind of shunned out. But then I figured out who Corey was and figured out a lot about him. And actually ended up, he became like my best friend and my mentor. And now he's like my hero. And just the way that he changed his life around really inspired me to change my life around. And he used to always tell me that I can do it. And I mean, he taught me everything about the sport, from how a fighter presents himself in and out of the cage. And yeah, I mean, he was my biggest, like, he was my biggest hero about that stuff, about from where he was, you know, a few years ago to where he is now. That's what really got me into it. Just kind of seeing that the sport's something that doesn't get you shunned out because of something you did in the past. It's something you can use that stuff to kind of feel you like Corey did.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, I think, and that's something that a lot of people fail to realize, that look at this great sport from the outside, is that they just look at it and they see this violent, you know, sport, but they don't really quite understand how much dedication and humbleness comes with being able to succeed in this sport. Was maybe the difficulty so far in your career one of the things that could maybe help you long run in learning that hump, that, you know, the ability to be humble?
Yes, and that's one of the first things me and Corey talked about. That's actually one of the main things I go on about all the time with people, is when people looking at this sport, they see it as some barbaric sport with two guys going in and beating the crud out of each other. But one thing I tell everybody is you don't understand the discipline, the, you know, the respect for the opponent across from you. And Corey showed me that stuff. I mean, you know, when he told me about how when you're training, how your opponent's training just as hard, and it's not just two guys going in and beating the crud out of each other. I mean, unless it's two indie guys, but hey, you know, that's their thing.
Yeah, I definitely understand what you're saying there. And I can imagine that if you were rolling with Corey, he probably just humbled you a lot in the Midtown gym, because I know that kid is, he's a freaking monster on the ground.
Oh yeah, that me and him would roll for like round after round after round, just, and he'd always catch me, and it was just crazy because his style was so weird. Me having my wrestling background, I thought that was going to help me out a little bit, and he'd sit there and let me just think that I'm doing something. I'd be like, yes, yes, I'm getting something on it. Whap, I'm caught in an inverted triangle. He's just so relaxed on the ground, and yeah, honestly, I learned so much from him on the ground that's where I felt the safest, you know, and my wrestling background, he helped me mix that in, and he taught me a few things from separating wrestling and jiu-jitsu, and how wrestling, how certain moves in wrestling will fail you on the ground in MMA, and how I can fix that and all that stuff. He made me the fighter I am today. He's the one that got me motivated, and the ground game was definitely where we spent the most time.
If I could just jump in really quick, going back to what you guys said about people viewing the sport as like violent, and you know, there's a bunch of criminals in the cage. Like, I can definitely say, since I'm fairly new to the sport, or mildly at least, I think it definitely takes for a person that, like, when I looking outside in, I saw people fighting and I was like, wow, why would you want to do that? People are crazy. I don't know who would ever want to do that. And I had like the worst views on it. I was like, it shouldn't happen. It's horrible. And then I think the only thing that can really change people's opinion is actually going to the show. Because like I said in my first article, you know, like the very first show I went to, I believe there was a knockout in like under 20 seconds. And I was like, this is crazy. I can't believe this. And like, there was definitely like a tear on my cheek. I was like, I can't even believe this. But it definitely, it's after they come out of the cage and after they've been knocked out and you see them and they're like, I can't wait to get back in again. I can't wait to go train again. It's then that exact moment right there that you see that it's not just violence. And so I think the only way that people's views are going to change on the sport is to actually attend an event.
Yeah, and I agree with you completely on that. Like, after my fight just this Saturday, you know, I had people come up and saying stuff about how, you know, it, how they had different views than the judges on it, because I lost by decision to Hank Koontz. But, you know, and honestly, I want to believe that stuff so much, but the thing is I wasn't training like I should have for that fight. He was probably in the gym busting his butt. So whether I don't know whether, you know, I'm the fighter. I don't know whether or not, you know, the judges were right or wrong, but I guarantee you he deserved it more than I did, because he was in there training his butt off while I was kind of doing some lifting and doing a little bit of light sparring and stuff. So, but it just motivates me, you know, tells me what I need to work on. And that's the, like I say all the time, you know, there's no loss as an amateur. It's either a win or you learn, and, you know, it's just kind of how it is. And so I learned from this one that I shouldn't be taking fights without the training, because then I become just another one of those guys who it is just fighting, and it's not the discipline and stuff like that behind it.
Yeah. How hard is it to suffer a loss knowing that maybe you would have lacked training on your end of the bout? Is it harder than actually going in and training 100% and losing that way?
Honestly, like, it goes both ways. Like, my fight against Gustavo Besa, I fought him for the number one contender belt on a Club Zoo fight, and I trained my butt off for that fight. Me and Corey were doing underwater training because we knew exactly what he was going to come out with. I knew he was going to, if he got me, it was going to be by a choke. And I trained and trained and trained so hard, and then I lost, and that was probably the hardest loss I've ever had. And but in this one right here against Hank, I didn't train for it, and honestly, I did a lot better than I was expected to do. But it still was hard on me, but the only reason it was hard on me was because I knew that if I could have done something different, the results would have been different. And so the loss was basically just from my lack of training and my lack of discipline for it. So it was kind of just an eye-opener for me more than anything. As in, when I fought Gustavo, it crushed me, you know, to see how hard I worked and not succeed. And knowing that he was going to go for that choke, and that's exactly how I lost, was by that rear naked choke. I don't know, I think it hurt worse training really hard and losing than it did not training and losing. When I didn't train and I lost, it was more of just an anger at myself for not putting in everything into the sport like I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah. So looking forward, is there any events or opponents that you would like to fight, or events that you would like to fight in coming up?
I'm not exactly sure the name of it, but I've talked to my manager a little bit. I'm not coming back until January because I've been pushing my ankles way past the limits right now, and I haven't been letting them heal. But I'm looking on doing a few small events, like some Club Zoo fights, or maybe even just another fisticuffs or something. But my manager told me he's going to get me into I believe it's called United Cage Combat or something. From what I've heard of it, it's a pretty big event, and one I'm pretty excited to get in. And I also really hope to fight for the Roseland Rumble sometime, just because that's close. And one other fight that no matter when it's at or when it is, I'm going to take it. It's the Midtown Throwdown, because I still haven't got a fight at home in front of my family and friends.
Yeah. How important is that atmosphere with the family and friends and having that sort of quote-unquote, like, home field advantage?
It means the world to me, because, I mean, this is why that fight's so big to me. I've been talking about it ever since I first seen the fight, because none of my family and friends, or not even the family and friends, but the people who knew the old Kevin, knew the punk, you know, people who knew that Kevin, just, it's my time to show them, you know. That's when I get to redeem myself in front of everybody. I mean, I saw so many people who used to just look down upon me going to those fights, and I thought, oh man, I can't wait to show them all how much I've changed, who I am now. And so that one's a big one. And just having the home field advantage and stuff like that, I mean, I'm not much of a believer in that, but, you know, just the factor of, you know, it kind of makes you want to train harder, fight harder, because the people who you love and care for and who are going to see you do something where it's going to hurt them to see it, if you do bad. That's a huge factor on me.
Yeah, and then your future goal, like ultimately you would want to be on the UFC and on this radio, of course, Cage Fire Radio. We get a lot of fighters that come on here or one story is done or go on other radio shows saying, I want to be in the UFC. I want to be in the UFC. I'm going to do it. But what do you think will set you apart that will actually have you achieve your goal of getting there?
Honestly, I don't know. I do know it's like, but I don't want to put down any of their dreams because who knows, you know? You never know who's going to make it. You never know who's not. But the thing that I really did is I came up, and Team Quest is a nationally known gym and a lot of the fighters in the UFC. And I seen that, and I gave up all my stuff just to come here and train. And unfortunately, I did it a little too quick without thinking about the money and stuff like that that was required. But I know that when I dedicate myself to it, I dedicate myself, and I don't stop until I get my goals, and that's what I'm going to do. And if it breaks me down into every little last bit and I don't get it, then I guess that's just what happens. But I don't see that happening in my future. I plan on working my butt off for my first fight all spring break while all my friends were out having fun and partying. I spent multiple hours in the gym. I was in from every morning to every single night. And since Midtown was 24 hours, I was in there in the middle of the night training, just getting myself ready. And I need to get myself back in that environment. And I know that if I can get myself back in that environment and with the improvement that I've been having since my first fight, I know that I can do something with my life. And I see this going farther for me because I know that I can do it. And it's not just like, I don't know, I don't want to be one of those cocky people, but I know it's not just a dream. It's my goal, and it's what I'm going to achieve. And I'm going to give up everything if I have to get it. And so if I don't make it, then I guess I start from rock bottom. But everything I have is going to go into it. And that's all. That's all there is to it.
Kevin, making the move from Midtown to Team Quest, how hard was that? I mean, knowing that you were going to be leaving your mentor, your good friend, and all your training partners behind, did they encourage the move for you to go to Team Quest? And has there ever been a moment where you're like, man, I still wish I was down there with my boys?
Oh, I think that all the time. And, you know, and actually, Corey told me he was proud of me for making this move. And one of the main reasons why I made the move right off the bat was because Corey was supposed to go on to the Ultimate Fighter. And so he was talking about leaving. And once he talked about leaving, I knew that, you know, once my coach was gone, I always heard him talk about Team Quest and how he'd go up there and do some cross training and stuff like that. And honestly, one of the reasons I wanted to go there too is, you know, maybe the fact that I'd run into my old coach again. And I always told Corey, you know, one day I'm going to catch up to you. And he supported it all the way. And I mean, it was really hard on me to move too. I mean, I just missed my little brother's birthday. I missed Halloween with my little brother. I got to call him, and he gave me a little bit of grief about missing his birthday. And I broke down a little bit, but, you know, it makes it that motivation. You know, it makes everything put in front of me to what I'm giving up. So it's either I can give that all up for nothing, or I can give it up and do what I said I would do. And my little brother, whenever I'd come home, like before I left every fight, he said, Kevin, are you going to go win that trophy? And because he plays with my first fight medal all the time, and he told everybody about the trophy. And so I'm going to bring home some trophies to my little brother.
Kevin, it sounds like, you know, you really got a good solid direction. And, you know, the people here with MMA Madhouse, Cage Fire Radio, man, we definitely will be supporting you as you make the journey moving forward. And we hope that you have the utmost success in this game. Before we have to wrap up your segment, do you want to give a shout-out to anybody, any sponsors, coaches, teammates? And then real quick, are you in Gresham or Tualatin?
I'm actually in Beaverton. I'm going to be training in Tualatin.
Okay.
Yeah, and I was calling a shout-out to, you know, Corey Wyatt, and thank you for everything he's done for me. And thanks to Midtown, and man, you know, thanks to Team Quest for giving me such an awesome place to train. Thanks to my manager for helping me get these fights and stuff like that, and thank you guys for letting me on the show.
Hey, man, anytime, brother, and anytime you want to come back on, man, you just hit Caitlin up. I know that she probably would love to have you back on. And if you're up there, just punch Chris Folsom for me one time. Tell him it's from the
All
hockey
right,
man.
All right.
Hey, man, and it sounds like you're a great role model for your little brother, man. So keep that up, buddy.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. That's Kevin
All right, so...
Bame, everybody.
All right. Bye.
And now we're going to move on to our special segment here where we talk tough smashes. Leonard, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here. How are you doing?
I'm doing really good, Leonard. How are you, my friend?
Good, good. I know we got cut off last time, so.
Yeah, I think last time we were we just wrapped up episode 4, which was the second welterweight fight, which would have been Luke Newman and Robert Whittaker, I think.
Right, right.
And then fight 5, I'm trying to think back now. I don't know. Let's talk about what happened this week with Xavier. And then, oh, no, we were also talking about Manny. That we had just finished, I think we were right getting to Manny and his situation with the broken leg and his fight
right.
with Bola.
Actually, you know what? I think we got cut off with Richie, remember?
Oh, no, you're right. It was Richie Vaz.
Right.
Who was is a 135er for all the listeners. He fights on the Gold Coast of Australia down there. He is actually fighting in the lightweight division on this on the Australian version of the Tough, and he faced probably a guy that I think would probably normally fight at maybe welterweight, it kind of looks like.
Right, right. You know, I'm not sure where he fights. I know where Richie fights, but not where the UK fights. But, yeah, Richie is a true 35er, took advantage of going to 155, and for all accounts did pretty well. You know, he went to a decision being a all time.
Well, and he dropped Park there in the first, I wouldn't say he dropped him. He put him on a knee. I mean, that's a drop in my book.
Yeah, he definitely stunned him.
He
definitely stunned him. Richie's tough. You know, Richie's a, I don't know if you know, but Richie's a pro surfer also. So he's not scared. He rushes big waves. He fights big guys. He's a tough guy. Like I said before, not making excuses, but in the right weight class, that guy's going to be a very dangerous guy in that 35-pound division, you know?
Oh, yeah, no, I definitely agree. And even if he wanted to try and take the cut down even farther to 125, I think he'd be ferocious.
Oh, he'd be a monster down there because he can hit. Like you said, I mean, he's fighting a lightweight and he's dropping guys. You know, imagine when he's a guy at his own weight. And, again, not making excuses. I mean, he got a tough fight. He knew what he was into. He decided to take that jump. But all accounts being a small guy, he did well. He did very well.
Yeah, and right after you got cut off, I wanted to explain to everybody exactly what you meant by that because I feel like that, you know, a lot of times people hear that, oh, you're making the size issue. Well, when you're talking two weight classes, that's not an excuse. That shows how much heart a guy like Richie Vasilik has when he's able to go the distance. Now, it might have only been a 2-round fight, but that's regardless. When you're in there with a guy that outweighs you by 20 pounds, and he did not weigh in the night of the fight, but if we're talking fight weight, when I say
right.
two weight classes.
Right, and that's not what I wanted to do. I didn't want to take away from Team UK. They had a great fight. They did what they're supposed to do. Richie knew what he was getting into before coming into. I was just stating the fact that he was a lot smaller. Not taking away from Team UK because they deserved that win. They earned that win. And, you know, I'm not taking away from that win.
Yeah, and I wanted to definitely reaffirm what you were trying to say there because I totally agree with everything you said, and I also don't think that you're taking anything away from what Norman Park did in that fight.
No, not at all. Yeah, definitely. I hope that doesn't come across that way because that's not what I'm trying to do. But, yeah, Richie is a tough guy, and, you know, there's tough guys on both sides, and this is what this competition is about, to see who's the best at any given time. They decide to fight who's going to have the best strategy, who's going to be able to do what they plan on doing and actually pull out the win. That's what the whole competition is about.
Yeah, and then the next fight was they went back to the welterweights where Bola Omoyele and Manny Rodriguez had what later down the road turned out to be maybe one of the craziest things I've seen in the cage.
Yeah, you know, those were just my pick, just the potential meeting of these guys. I thought those two guys would be the two to go to the finals, you know, just, I mean, I know, and I'm, again, just saying on first meeting them, things, you know, a lot of guys are worthy for the finals, but Bola has Bulla is tough. You know, Bulla, I got to imagine, was the favorite for the welterweight. He's trained with American Top Team. He's got a lot of experience. Manny has a lot of experience. They're both the bigger, stronger guys. Those were the two that, you know, unofficially people were saying should make it. And so it made for an interesting fight.
No, it did. And that leg kick that Bulla landed in the first round actually ended up having a long-term effect on the show. Even though Manny was able to withstand that kick and then come back and win with the north-south choke in the second round, on what was a beautiful takedown and right into north-south control. How impressed were you guys as a coaching staff when he was able to land that?
Yeah, we were very impressed. You know, I mean, like you say, timed it perfect. And, again, that goes to show you how tough these guys were. One guy's tough enough to kick another guy and break his leg, and the other guy is tough enough that with a broken leg, take this guy down. And not only in the way that he took him down, he landed him on his head. He picked him clearly off his feet and dumped him on his head.
Yeah, and then had the choke. I mean, it must have been like 4 or 5 seconds he had that choke locked in of when they hit the ground.
Right, right. And, you know, and the next day, man, he's walking around the gym, not even knowing that his leg is broken yet. So, I mean, they're all tough. But that was a great fight.
I think
they
showed you, Leonard, like sitting there next to him, and he was rubbing his leg, and you're like, "What are you doing?" And he's like, "Oh, my leg kind of hurts." And you're like, "Really?"
Yeah.
And then
exactly.
He got to make the trip.
Yeah, exactly. I went with him to the doctor, and I mean, I was shocked. You saw on the show how they showed the X-ray, and I'm looking at X-ray, going, "Man, I can't believe this guy walked upstairs." I mean, first of all, he had that great shot, took Bulla down, finished the fight, walked out of the cage, walked around for a day and a half before actually going to the doctor's and walking up, I don't know, 30 stairs, up a flight of stairs to the doctor's office before he found his leg was even broken. That's crazy.
Yeah. Now, as you've been able to see the show, Leonard, what did you think about the UK's reception of Manny and the amount of respect I felt that they showed him?
Oh, I thought it was great. You know, I think you got to remember this is a TV show, and a lot of things should be edited different ways. I'm not saying there wasn't some kind of animosity for, you know, competition. I mean, just for the competition. But for the most part, all the guys respect each other. They all know what it takes to be there. They all know the sacrifice. They all know how hard they train. I mean, even though there's that rivalry, I think there still is that mutual respect just as a fighter. And you know, it takes something like that, or an injury where it just shows, you know, that they really do have it. I mean, as much as they wanted to beat Manny, they didn't want Manny to get hurt or leave the show, you know. So, I mean, it just shows the respect they have for each other.
Most definitely. And then, so you guys then had the fight, and who I thought on your team was maybe the best long-term prospect in Patrick Iodice, and he fought the replacement for Michael Petrelko, I can't say the guy's name, I don't want to really butcher it, but the gentleman tore his tricep on the opening training session. They brought in a replacement, Brendan Lupnane, and him and Patrick had one hell of a fight.
Yeah, there's all good fights. You know, Patrick is the youngest one on the show, and although he had a good record, he's still young. He's still not inexperienced in the sense as fights, but he's still experienced in life, you know, and he's very good. He's got very good talent, and I just think he just got to believe that he is as good as he is, or as good as we know he is, and once he does that, he's going to be a beast. And, before the fight, he had a little bit of doubt. I'm not sure if that played in the fight because it was a great fight, and again, not taken away from Team UK, they did what they needed to do and got it done, but, you know, he's young. He's going to grow. He's going to get better and better. And he still is, I think, a big prospect for Team Australia.
Yeah, and when you say the youngest on the show, I want the listeners to understand, that's on any series, any season of The Ultimate Fighter that has gone down. Patrick Iodice is the youngest competitor to qualify for this experience.
Right, right. And that can be overwhelming, you know, when you're a fighter and this is the big show and you finally get to make it and you're the youngest. I mean, you can't feel the pressure on TV, although when I watch the show, I still know the results and I still get nervous for these guys, you know, it's incredible. So the atmosphere there when it's happening is, that's a lot of pressure for somebody who's not used to it and, you know, that's their dream. And so it's a little overwhelming sometimes, you know.
Yeah, most definitely. I thought We'll talk about this later when we kind of have more time. We're not doing trying to. Next week we'll have, you know, we'll be caught up on all the episodes. But after the Loughnane fight, the Loughnane Iodized fight was the last welterweight fight, and your team has actually been sweeping the welterweight division. You had your last fighter, Xavier the X-Man Lucas, was facing arguably, and he was in my book, and I feel like I'm fairly well entrenched in the MMA world, an unknown prospect in Bradley Scott.
Right, right. Yeah, you know, I don't know if you know X's background, too. He's also a shooto champ from Japan. He has a shooto belt holder. So that's
no, yeah, I knew that about X-Man.
Yeah. Brad, I didn't know anything about Brad, but, you know, in general, for the most part, I didn't know a lot about the Brits until George started studying the tapes and I watched them with them. But... Another good guy, and that's why he's on the show. So even though he's was not well known, he definitely deserved to be there, you know. And it was again another good fight. I mean, all the fights so far have been great fights.
No, yeah, and I thought the thing that I noticed in watching that fight with Bradley Scott, and not to put a lot of pressure on anybody or try to say that he is this person, but I did see a lot of Michael Bisping in him.
Ah, yeah, you know, I never thought about that, but now you say that, I could see that, you know, I really could. Although, you know, I don't know Michael Bisping personally. He's kind of loud, and he's boisterous, and Brad, I got to know a little bit just from the show, and he's a nice, quiet guy. I mean, in the cage, I can see similarities in the fighting, but as a personality, they're totally, totally different.
No, I would totally 100% agree with you there, Leonard. But I mean, if you look at him in the cage, the guy, it looks like he has just relentless cardio. He's well versed on the ground and on the feet.
Yeah, exactly. You're right.
And now you guys have a replacement for Manny, and I'm probably going to do a horrible job here, but James Vinicolo.
Right, Vinicolo, yes.
Now, what was the theory about, like, he didn't seem too anxious to fight his way into the semifinals, but everybody else, the other 15 competitors did. Was that the same theory the coaches had?
You know, we really didn't know what was going to happen. Here, the thinking was Manny won the slot for Team Australia, and if James was to fight anyone, he should fight an Aussie. So if he does lose, it still goes to Team Australia, which makes sense because we won that slot anyways. There should be no reason why we give it up because of an injury. So fighting a UK fighter, you would have the possibility of giving up a slot that you've already won.
Did I lose Leonard again?
Yeah, I think so.
All right, well, Kayla, why don't you give the wrap-up on your buddy?
Okay, so
our
buddy, okay, well, he's my buddy first, but anyways. anyways, though, Sam, the Sea Monster Sealander, is, he did go home today from the hospital, and he's going to start physical therapy as of tomorrow. So he's on his road to recovery, and I have an article that is semi-finished and should be coming out ASAP after I have him review it to make sure everything medically is correct. And so that will be a huge update that people can get more info on what happened and what he broke and how he's on the road to recovery. So the best way to find out, I guess, would be to read that or talk to him. But... yeah, he's doing pretty good, though. He's in really positive spirits. He's not letting this discourage him or get him down, so it's good.
That's great. You know, I mean, I've been able to talk to Sam here frequently, and it sounds like, you know, he's on the right track as long as he has the right nurse with him.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely depends on that. So I'd like to wrap it up and say thank you for being my co-host tonight since Skippy couldn't make it on here.
Hey, it was a lot of fun, and I appreciate you inviting me over.
Yeah, definitely. And also, again, thank you to BrawlBase.com and MMA Madhouse and all the guests that came on our show tonight. And I don't think we have a confirmed guest for next week, but we should have one in the next couple of days. So make sure to watch the Cage Fire Radio live updates. And I am your host, Caitlin Deany, and this is my co-host.
Lopaki, catch me tomorrow night, flying solo. Peace.
Time to disperse. Party's over.